June, week 4, Monday. 1. Beautiful smile and love. Reading. The poor are very wonderful people. One evening we went out and we picked up 4 people from the street, and one of them was in a most terrible condition. And I told the sisters, "You take care of the other 3. I take care of this one, who looked worse." So I did for her all that my love can do. I put her in bed, and there was such a beautiful smile on her face. She took hold of my hand as she said just the words, "Thank you," and she died. I could not help but examine my conscience before her, and I asked what I would say if I was in her place. And my answer was very simple. I would have tried to draw a little attention to myself. I would have said, "I am hungry, that I am dying, I am cold, I am in pain," or something. But she gave me much more. She gave me her grateful love, and she died with a smile on her face. As did that man whom we picked up from the drain, half-eaten with worms, and we brought him to the home. I have lived like an animal in the street, but I am going to die like an angel, loved and cared for. And it was so wonderful to see the greatness of that man who could speak like that, who could die like that without blaming anybody, without cursing anybody, without comparing anything. Like an angel, this is the greatness of our people, and that is why we believe what Jesus had said, "I was hungry, I was naked, I was homeless, I was unwanted, unloved, uncared for, and you did it to me." I believe that we are not real social workers. We may be doing social work in the eyes of the people, but we are really contemplatives in the heart of the world. For we are touching the body of Christ 24 hours. And I think that in our family, we don't need bombs and guns to destroy, to bring peace. Just get together, love one another, bring that peace, that joy, that strength of presence of each other in the home. And we will be able to overcome all the evil that is in the world. And with this prize that I have received as a prize of peace, I am going to try to make the home for many people who have no home. Because I believe that love begins at home, and if we can create a home for the poor, I think that more and more love will spread. And we will be able, through this understanding love, to bring peace, be the good news to the poor. The poor in our own family first, in our country and in the world. To be able to do this, our sisters, our lives have to be woven with prayer. They have to be woven with Christ to be able to understand, to be able to share. Because to be woven with Christ is to be able to understand, to be able to share. Because today there is so much suffering. When I pick up a person from the street, hungry, I give him a plate of rice, a piece of bread. I have satisfied. I have removed that hunger. But a person who is shut out, who feels unwanted, unloved, terrified, the person who has been thrown out from society, that poverty is so full of hurt and so unbearable. And so let us always meet each other with a smile, for the smile is the beginning of love, and once we begin to love each other naturally, we want to do something.
Tuesday. 2. Bill Gates died and found himself face to face with God. Reading. God said, "Well, Bill, I'm really confused on this one. It's a tough decision. I'm not sure whether to send you to heaven or hell. After all, you help society enormously by putting a computer in almost every home in America. Yet you also created that ghastly Windows 95, among other indiscretions. I believe I'll do something I've never done before. I'll let you decide where you want to go. Bill replied, Could you briefly explain the difference between the two? God said, Better yet, why don't I let you visit both places briefly? Then you can make your decision. Which do you want to see first, heaven or hell? Bill said, I think I'll try hell first. So with a flash of lightning and a cloud of smoke, he went to hell. It was beautiful and clean, a bit warm, with sandy beaches and tall mountains, clear skies, pristine water, and beautiful women frolicking about. This is great, he thought. If this is hell, I can't wait to see heaven. Another flash of lightning and a cloud of smoke appeared, and Bill was off to heaven. Heaven was a place high above the clouds, where angels were drifting about playing their harps and singing in a beautiful chorus. It was a very nice place, Bill thought, but not as enticing as hell. Bill looked up, yelled for God, told him his decision, and was sent to hell for eternity. Time passed, and God decided to check on the late billionaire to see how he was progressing in hell. When he got there, he found Bill Gates shackled to a wall in a dark cave amid bone-thin men and tongues of fire, being burned and tortured by demons. So, how is everything going? God asked. Bill responded with a cracking voice filled with anguish and disappointment. This is awful. It's nothing like the hell I visited the first time. I can't believe this is happening. What happened to the other place with the beaches and the mountains and the beautiful women? That was the demo, replied God.
Wednesday, 3. Big John. Reading. One fine day, a bus driver went to the bus garage, started his bus, and drove off along his route. No problems for the first few stops. A few people got on, a few got off, and things went generally well. At the next stop, however, a big hulk of a guy got on. 6'8", built like a wrestler, arms hanging down to the ground. He glared at the driver and said, Big John doesn't pay, and sat down at the back. The driver was 5'3", thin, and basically meek. Naturally, he didn't argue with Big John, but he wasn't happy about it. The next day, the same thing happened. Big John got on again, made a show of refusing to pay, and sat down. And the next day, and the one after that, and so forth. This grated on the bus driver, who started losing sleep over the way Big John was taking advantage of him. Finally, he could stand it no longer. He signed up for bodybuilding courses, karate, judo, and all that good stuff. By the end of the summer, he had become quite strong. What's more, he felt really good about himself. So, on the next Monday, when Big John once again got on the bus and said, Big John doesn't pay, the driver stood up, glared back at the passenger, and screamed, Oh yeah? And why not? With a surprised look on his face, Big John replied, Big John has a bus pass.
Thursday. 4. Test scores don't say it all. Excerpted. Reading. How does the U.S. rank in the International Human Capital Standings? That's a tricky question. Over time, the American economy has shown more dynamism and sustained growth than just about any other. But if you look only at the performance of the average American high school student on international tests, you would think it was a nation of dim-witted dullards. What explains this paradox? To some extent, the answer must be the quality of American universities, which are highly efficient, intensely competitive, and wonderfully endowed. and which increasingly recruit the best students from around the world. But university professors aren't magicians. However skilled they may be, if their inputs from high schools are garbage, their outputs of graduates will not be much better. This leads me to suspect that there are some hidden elements of the American high school experience that contribute mightily to the formation of human capital. In the past 10 years, American high schools have gone through a quiet revolution, stressing a return to basics. 4 years of math, science, English, social studies, and a foreign language, while assessing student performance in state-mandated tests. At the same time, American kids, internet savvy, and keyboard confident from about the third grade, have developed the skills and comfort with technology that are vital for success in the job market. Trust me on this. These days, when I have to give a speech, my daughters, ages 11 and 13, turn my scribbled notes into a PowerPoint presentation. And unlike German and Japanese students, who are talked at by teachers for most of their school years, American students learn social skills and group work in environments that celebrate diversity. To be sure, the education given to millions of children in urban school systems like New York City's would be a national disgrace in Germany, never mind Singapore. But the triple play of basics, technology, and diversity has done this generation of American students proud. It will help maintain the dynamism of the U.S. economy a lot better than all the oil or diamonds in the world.
Friday, 5. Snowflakes. Out of the bosom of the air, out of the cloud folds of her garments shaken, over the woodlands brown and bare, over the harvest fields forsaken, silent and soft and slow, descends the snow. Even as our cloudy fancies take suddenly shape in some divine expression, even as the troubled heart doth make in the white countenance confession, the troubled sky reveals the grief it feels. This is the poem of the air, slowly in silent syllables recorded. This is the secret of despair, long in its cloudy bosom hoarded, now whispered and revealed to wood and field.